Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. So no big surprise, I talk a lot. And now I can share some of the incredible people that cross my path and the interesting conversations that we have. The Private Practice Secrets podcast is all about sharing our business experiences and harnessing our collective wisdom. My guests are amazing. They're bold, brave, and they're honest. There are many laughs, and surprisingly, there's frequent talk of wine. We're sure you're really going to enjoy these unplugged private practice chats. So settle in. Let's get the conversation started. Robin Stephen, it has been like climbing Everest, but we are at base camp. It's taken months to organize this. Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So Robin is the founding director of Melbourne Child Development. And I'm going to throw straight to Robin to explain the brand transition from Robin Stephen and Associates that many listeners will know you as. Talk me through this.
Hi, Kathy. It's just a delight to speak to you. And I've listened to some of your podcasts already, and I actually was very motivated after listening to them. So re-energized, reinvigorated in terms of coming back to my own practice. So, yeah, the rebranding, it's quite a story. I've had the great fortune, the great opportunity to be on the Speech Pathology Australia board for the last 6 years, first as a general director and then as vice president operations, where I was responsible. I had governance of the finances of the whole association.
That's an evil laugh.
Despite running a practice for, at that stage, over 15 years, it was a steep learning curve when I was responsible for somebody else's money. And then I was vice president of communications. And in the last couple of years, we have had an amazing national project called Speech Pathology 2030. And I was on the steering committee with that, along with some really great brains, which was fantastic. So part of that big project, we had program facilitator, and I'll give Gretchen a plug, Gretchen Young from Young Futures, who led the association in gaining input from very many sources, from thought leaders, from consumers, members, national office staff. So I was wonderful to be involved with that. And then we produced our Speech Pathology 2030 document. So after having gone through that process, two things happened. I then came across an amazing young woman. Her name is Emily Peeve, who was running a big practice but was understaffed in her capacity there and so needed to leave. And I just thought she was an amazing young woman. So I snatched her up and she came on board with us in the last couple of years as practice manager. So I thought, well, she's a really bright young mind, and I really need to have a strategic direction that she can be following. So a bit of a map. So then let's get Gretchen on board. I knew it was going to cost us, well, no reflection on Gretchen, but for a practice our size, it was going to cost a lot to run a strategic planning, well, project, I suppose. So Gretchen came on board, and again, she helped us to survey clients. We surveyed staff, we surveyed referring agents, and we came up with a strategic plan. And part of the strategic plan was that Robin Stephen and Associates perhaps should evolve into a multidisciplinary practice and perhaps change the name. So I must admit, good thing about being busy is you don't think about these things too much. But the actual day of the launch, when I realised that we were no longer Robin Stephen and Associates, and then you know what? It wasn't so much about my name. It was just that people knew who we were by that name. It's not really an ego trip thing about me. All our referral agents, our clients, the reputation we've built up, that brand, we were going to change that brand to something that people had never heard of before. So that was really the scary moment.
And I was just about to ask, what were your feelings when Robin Stephen and Associate was respectfully and lovingly being parked, and then the ship was sailing on with a different badge. How did that feel?
Yeah, look, I did have some private moments of sadness and also of fear in terms of, are we losing our reputation that goes with that name? Will we still have the number of referrals? Will our network still work with us in the same way? So there was a little bit of, look, it was really a moment of sadness, but it was also a moment of, anticipation and fear that life was going to continue as it always had. But the launch was, look, I'm really not a planner.
I'm just holding my breath on that. You're not a planner. You keep talking. I'm going to just sit with that. Gosh.
Well, I have been most fortunate to have my husband as the other director of this, and he has a background in chartered accountancy. He works with innovators. He was a partner with PwC. So he always coaching me. And that sort of coaching, there's good and bad things about living with your coach, because sometimes you just don't want any coaching. So he always calls me Action Annie, because he'll talk to me about something and the next day I've done it or tried it, and I'll come home and say, I tried that and this was the result of that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I put a really good plan in place before I tried something. So it's really my staff who I've had to listen to and respect, in terms of not everybody operates like that, in terms of let's do it and then we'll backtrack and think, maybe we should send out this bit of information, or maybe we should do this, maybe we should do that. So I've got much better warning people about what might be coming, consulting, planning, and putting things into action. I was thinking about, we had some really heavy planning that went into the rebranding launch. So that actually meant that the day we launched, Melbourne Child Development went very smoothly, and it's gone very smoothly since. And we did have pushback from one of our referring agents, very interestingly, and I don't really want to sort of say too much about it, but quite an unexpected pushback about us changing our name. So
how interesting. There you go. Mm. We can talk about that another time.
Yes.
How interesting. My business brain is firing and thinking that the rebranding provides a huge opportunity to reconnect with your stakeholders and reconnect with people who know and love you, and connect with people who don't know you yet. And it's such a beautiful, not excuse, but a beautiful chance to just kind of get out. Yeah, look at us now. We've got new colours, we've got a new website, we've got a new logo. And it's a lovely way to, build and restore and maintain relationships. Has that been part of the plan and the experience?
Look, it has been. So launching, obviously, with very strong communication to all of our networks with our clients. We produced a flyer which sits on the front counter, but also sent to our clients that says we're changing names, and and the frequently asked questions flyers, and they can take it in hard copy or read it while in the waiting room, and they all were sent it. And we're co-branding for a little while, probably till the end of the year, and then we'll fully go to one brand. So it has been a chance for, people have not at all hesitated in continuing to refer, and I think, as you say, they've been very pleased for us that we're moving with the times and looking to the future, and we have brightened up, that in a way reflects our practice. Our practice is evidence-based. We have the opportunity to be more innovative with a multidisciplinary team. So, true. It's a good time to connect.
How has the rebranding changed, if at all, your organisational culture?
I think because we rebranded, because we brought along the staff through the strategic plan, and one of the strategic directions was rebranding, that they really feel part of this energy. They feel like they're part of it. They feel proud of the name. It's been received extremely well by the staff. And sorry, what, now I've forgotten your question. What was the question?
It's Friday afternoon. My question was about how has the rebranding changed, if at all, your organisational culture?
Yeah. Well, so it's more about how the strategic plan has changed the organisational culture. And I'll hold up, but your listeners won't be able to hear.
Oh, I can see it though. It's true. It exists.
Yes, but and we're very happy to share that with. It's on our website. So we've made our strategic plan accessible for staff and also for our clients.
Brilliant move.
A big poster in the headquarters, as we call it, where the staff work doing their admin. We have it available for the clients. And it's very, the five fingers of our new brand actually work perfectly with the five elements of our strategic plan. And so in our staff meetings, each staff member has taken on one of those strategic directions and reports on that. So we've set a short-term and a long-term goal under each of those strategic headings. For example, client-centered, our work will be guided by clients' priorities, goals, and preferred ways of working. So we've set a short-term goal that we're going to implement in the practice and a long-term goal, which is interestingly, training, because we all think we're client-centered. Everyone will call themselves client-centered, but from the people I've spoken to who really know about client-centeredness, we've got a lot more to learn. And so one of our long-term goals is actual training in this area of what does client-centeredness truly look like. So also our performance appraisals and personal planning for each of the staff members is now under each of the strategic directions in terms of, what goals they've achieved in those areas and what direction they're going in terms of their future goals under the strategic directions.
Sounds amazing.
It does, because it means that in the goals, we've also got one like that's sustainability, where we'll build a strong and sustainable business. So I think that really helps clinicians, because we're also focused on our clinical work, preparing for that session that we deliver and having a very high quality session and high quality communication with the client. But often it's hard for clinicians in private practice to have that sustainable business hat on. That's sort of something that's left to the director, but in fact we all need to be responsible for that.
Yeah, all got to pull in the one direction around that. And I was talking with someone yesterday about how we so heavily invest in our clinical selves, but we don't nearly, as a rule, invest to the same degree in our personal selves or even our professional selves, or if we're business owners, our business selves. And that is a trend that I anticipate will be changing in the coming years.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we've also set as a long-term goal to have some training around marketing so that all of the staff have the training around marketing, because I think there is a reluctance among clinical staff still to go out and leave the business card to talk about more broadly about what the business provides, how the business can benefit other children at that particular centre or other services for that particular child. So one of our other goals this year is marketing training for the whole team.
Oh, I'm delighted to hear that. And I think there's a few moving parts in this marketing piece. We tend to think of it as a bit of a madman scenario when it's meetings and schnoozing and cards and sales. But there's 101 other more positive, respectful, authentic ways of marketing. And, maybe even take out marketing and put in messaging. Value of working with your business. And that stuff all gets brushed over. We tend to go for this kind of, in-game cliched marketing approach, but, the reports you write, the way you answer the phone, how long it takes to return an email, the waiting room, there are just all of those other really, really important pieces. And if you talk with the parents and the people who buy your services, that is what they notice.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think we're very proud of our practice, of our rooms. We have upgraded 4 times since I started the practice in 1997. Like everybody, started in my lounge room, and after the first year moved into our first premises, which was sort of above a shop in a shopping strip. Then we moved to premises on a major road, on Whitehorse Road, which is a major road in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. And we outgrew Whitehorse Road, so we started a second practice on the other side of the freeway in the northern areas of Heidelberg. And then we actually, even though I'm not really the finance brains, I thought, do you know what? I'm not sure. I mean, I know you have been able to sell your practice, and I, you know, completely admire you for that. That's absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking, I'm not sure that we're going to get a return for the practice, but, you know, let's get a building. And it's not necessarily the best way to go. You're either in the business of property or you're in the business of speech pathology, and we're in the business of speech pathology, and I'd always believed that. But it got to the point where I guess it was just as much an emotional decision as it was a business decision. So we managed to buy a property in Box Hill South, and it's a beautiful, one of the original orchard houses of the area, where the house that had been beautifully renovated with a central passage, beautiful rooms off either side, the architraves and are all still here. And but of course we've invested heavily in accessibility, so building a car park. We got caught with the new 2013 local council regulations where our practice has to be completely accessible for a staff member in a wheelchair. So that means, you know, all of your photocopying areas and your filing areas. But we've done it. Like we've invested, and we've invested in reupholstering all our furniture, and it's a really, I'm really, really proud of our space. And I know the staff love working here. Lots of sunshine, lots of windows and doors to open. There's outside areas to use as well. And I just really love being here.
Sounds dreamy. Absolutely. I must come out and have a look. I remember hearing about all of the adaptions and building work that you had to do. So kudos to you. Huge, huge effort. And no doubt several trips to IKEA.
Yeah. I mean, it's an investment. It's probably a 10-year investment. So yeah,
absolutely.
But, you know, in the end, I think the building is going to pay off for us. So we will have that at the end of, you know, whether we sell the practice, whether we retire, whatever, there'll be something in it for us. So that's exciting as well.
Absolutely. I want to acknowledge you as a pioneer of private practice. We're both sitting here in Melbourne. And while I don't want to dwell on it, I really would love to hear from you the changes that you've noticed since 1997 on the private practice front. So a quick little observation of all that is relevant and of interest to you in those decades since.
Yeah, well, I think that it's interesting about the clientele. Well, obviously, when I first began, there wasn't a lot of people who were working full-time in private practice. You know, they'd sort of do 4 days a week in a secure position and then 1 day a week in private practice. So I stopped working in the Austin I was working at that stage, and I made the leap into private practice full-time because the thing that drove me was the quality of the service, the quality of the service delivery, education in hospitals, in schools, and I just thought I could do it a lot better in terms of, just doing what clients wanted to be done, having the autonomy, having the independence to drive a high quality of service. That's really why I went into private practice. So at that time, the clients you would get would be those who couldn't get government or education services. So they were probably the more complex clients. So quite complex. And from there, so has the private practice changed? That's probably how I developed my clientele, because I took on very complex clients. I used networks. I read, I researched, and I basically took every opportunity that came my way and worked with clients. We worked in schools very, very early on, and that's changed a lot. So that's something that's changed. Schools, schools becoming through legislation and not having consultants come into the school. So it's not as easy to be in schools unless the school employs you. So it's not as easy to be a consultant coming to a school. We still have several schools that we go to, but, you know, at one point we had 15 schools that we would go to every week. What else has changed? So now practices are more than just solo practices. It is very common for people to have staff. In the early days of private practice, the staff, pretty much everyone used to have staff on contract. So we have gone through a very steep learning curve in that regard. And with all of the information that's coming out, and I don't necessarily agree that it's accurate about what's contractor versus what's an employee, but you're faced with what people understand, and they're not lawyers and accountants. And so I moved to salaried staff probably about 6 years ago. So all my staff are salaried staff. So that's, you know, that's a big change in private practice, I think.
Yep. Yeah.
What else has changed? I still think there is a difficulty. There's still in speech pathology, because private practice hasn't been around for that long, there's still a private-public divide around charging money for speech pathology services. And that's changing slowly, but it's just still, you know,
it's still there. And it rears its head in so many different ways.
Absolutely. So we're sticking at it. You know, I think those in private practice are continuing to educate, continuing to show what a high quality service we give, what a client responsive service we give. And then I think people in the public sector realise that, yeah, we're giving a great service and we, you know, deserve to get paid like, you know, any other professional in the community.
Services, yep. Services sector. What a good romp through history. What a good romp. So you've been a business owner for a long time now. What has your business taught you?
What's it taught me? I've always had, Tony, my husband and I have always had, you know, a little line that we've used about the Kaizen philosophy, which is a Japanese philosophy about continuous improvement, you know, small change, but continuous small change and continuous improvement. That's definitely the way that we operate. I've also learnt about the need to consult the experts in everything. So I have not shied away from paying high fees for labour law specialists, for personnel advice, for some professional coaching. So, yes, I've sought a lot of advice in business, taken any opportunity that's come around for business coaching. We were chosen as a small business in the Small Business Victoria for a training course some years ago, which was sort of completely overwhelming and was more designed for people exporting innovation from Australia. But anyhow, we took from it what we could, learnt a lot, been able to have the opportunity of participating in a leadership program through Speech Pathology Australia, using networks through Speech Pathology Australia, and I think particularly the private practice network. I was very involved in before 2000 in actually organising that, and I organised a lot of workshops for the speech pathologists in private practice through that. And in fact, I was of the era where we had a marketing consultant at one of the workshops who said, "Why do you call yourself private practitioners? Like, that's just alienating yourself from the market."
A very good question.
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually changed our name then from Speech Pathology Private Practitioners Victoria to VISPNet, and VISPNet still stays now, and that means Victorian Independent Speech Pathologists Network. So it stands out on its own, really. It's no one else calls their network in any other state. Everyone's a private practitioner.
Yeah.
So in terms of, yeah, what have I learned in business? Yeah, use networks, learn from people, listen to people, learn from your mistakes, of which I have made so many.
I was just about to ask you, we could probably compare our mistake list.
Yeah.
Would you agree that you learn more from your mistakes than your successes?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because you need to sit and analyze and reflect and think what the heck just happened there, you know, how did we get into the situation? And I think also from mistakes, but also from dealing with complex clients, particularly parents, really sticking at it, really nutting it out, really making people happy in the end, you learn so much, and those people end up being your best advocates, you know, from that point forward. So really, really sticking with the hard problems and really trying to nut it out. And of course, you know,
a good dose of patience. And some problems need to be left, and they need some distance on them, and they may unravel themselves. Oftentimes you need some mental and emotional distance, because jumping in to solve them is just not going to be helpful. So whether it's a day or a week or whatever, I found that that was often a strategy to just step back and observe and watch, wait and wonder.
Yeah.
Several sleepless nights in my business career.
I think you're a very good role model for moving through those, coming through the end in a positive way, not retaining ill feelings that only eat at you, and don't promote your own health and health and welfare. I think what I'm better at now is seeing problems coming, you know, seeing, particularly with staff management, you know, that I'll see something that's coming, and it's just really, isn't it really hard? Get that balance between listening and compromising, but basically, you know, being a good manager in terms of actually having to take all of that on board, but make a decision for that's going to, you know, that you think is going to be the best course for the clients and for the staff and for the business. It's such a fine balance, fine line.
Yeah. I'm really interested, particularly at the moment, but on and off, about what management is and what leadership is, because they're really, really different. And when you're both, you need to know the difference, and you also need to know the overlap. So once again, the OT is visual. I'm holding up my hands and overlapping. But that's been some really interesting reading and learning for me, is knowing the similarities and differences between management and leadership.
Absolutely. And I think when you're an allied health practitioner running a business, I think you have to do both. And it is very difficult to, I think you kind of almost have to reflect about which role you are in from occasion to occasion, situation to situation. You know, and you just look, you get to the point where you just want to say, look, you know what, this is the way it's going to be, but you know that that's going to end in tears. So, you know, the consultative process and really, really listening, because I think I always listen, but I obviously don't always really get the message.
So I'm guilty of listening for what I want to hear.
Well, that's just human nature.
Oh, good. Thank you for that.
Yes.
Makes me feel better. Let's talk about your team at the moment. I took a little glance at your new website again this morning.
It's not quite new. It's renovated, and
yeah, it is.
We're in the process of getting a new website. Yeah, so it's in renovation.
Yeah, it feels a bit hybrid-y. But congratulations, rock star photographs of all of your team. They are spectacular.
Yeah, so that is, a recent investment.
Yeah.
That was good advice from somebody, from Tony, who's been in corporate land. And it's like, you know, you need to actually go out and get corporate photos. So it was nerve-wracking for the staff, because we actually went into the city to a corporate photographer who was amazing, and who, you know, did a photographic session with each staff member. And so it's wonderful, because we've got the team, but he can delete or add one person to that team at, you know, within a couple of hours' notice. So,
great investment. The photos are amazing. Talk me through who is in your team at the moment.
Well, we have a wonderful admin team, ably led by our practice manager, and we have two admin staff, one of whom I'm delighted to say is my daughter, because she's finishing her naturopathy studies. have her 2 days a week and she's just a dynamo, having been, you know what it's like when your children are brought up hearing about your work all of their life.
So and she's putting stamps on envelopes and washing toys and packing the shirts and playing quietly while you're there on a Saturday afternoon again.
Yeah, she's come through, you know, being the cleaner to being, you know, doing some bookkeeping to, yeah, absolutely sorting the toys. And here she is now. She's a great social media person. So, you know, that's really helped us over the last 6 months since she's been with us. She's a dynamo, and we're getting our newsletters out again, which is fantastic, and they have been really well received. And so, yes, so I digress. So the staff we have with us, administration, and we've just taken on a lovely young woman who is from Epic, who's going to help us with our scanning. So that's going to help us with our filing management. We were going to go with a very large company, and it was going to cost us, you know, some $50,000, so we're employing somebody instead. We have 6 speech pathologists, which is really interesting because we did have up to 15 speech pathologists, but they were combinations of part-time speech pathologists. So now our 6 speech pathologists, 5 full-time speech pathologists and 1 who is full-time now, she's doing her study in education. And that is quite... And it's just been by accident. It's not been by any deliberate...
No plan there?
No, there hasn't been any deliberate... I suppose I have offered full-time jobs, so I have been advertising full-time jobs, and that's what I tend to do. So that's absolutely makes life quite manageable when you've got full-time people in terms of client appointments. We also have a psychologist that works here 2 days a week who makes a wonderful contribution to the team, and we're just expanding to, with your support, to offer a full-time occupational therapist position here as well. So we're getting very excited about that.
Let it be said, every business needs an occupational therapist.
And we have a lot of support staff, you know, a lot of consultants, accountancy, and, you know, all the usual. Cleaning and
the tribe. It takes a tribe to raise a business.
Yeah.
What makes Melbourne Child Development completely and utterly unique?
Well, I suppose it's unique in that we have been in existence for 20 years. So we've learnt a lot, and hopefully that's evidenced in terms of our staff management and our staff provisions and client contact and programs we run. I think we are very responsive to the clients and always looking to the research evidence and what's out there and what's available, and listen to our clients. So we're responding to what the clients are asking for. Our survey last year was fantastic. We've still sort of got a lot of work to do there in terms of what they're asking for. For example, the Secret Agent Society came along about 5 years ago, and that's a social-emotional, you know, skills program for aged 12-year-olds. And we've really put everything we have into running that really well, educating teachers, bringing teachers in for a really scrumptious afternoon tea to get them all on board from the very, very start of the program. And so we've run that for about 5 years, and we have really good success rate and you know, excellent participation. It's really hard work. The clinicians have to stay, you know, here until 6:30 at night to run that program, but at least they work in teams, a lot of parent education, teacher involvement. So that's just an example of really looking to the market, looking for innovation. You know, so I think that we're innovative in our practices. What makes us different? I think we have always maintained our philosophy of excellence, no matter what the market, no matter what the competition, and there's been lots of ups and downs in terms of, you know, peaks and troughs in competition. So we've just always stuck to doing our assessments, being very thorough in our assessments. We write assessment reports. It's part of our practice. When we tell that to the clients when we come, it's not an option. And a report is part of the assessment process. We've improved both our payment for reports and our client service by scheduling a feedback session when we deliver the report. That means we get paid for it when we deliver it, and also we're providing a wonderful client service in terms of explaining the report right then and there to the clients. So we just have, I believe we have a really high standard in everything that we provide. There's no half measures. We, you know, go the extra mile, and that takes a lot of time. So our client contact time for, you know, a full-timer is about, including travel, is about 20 hours. And then there's 18 hours of support time that goes into provision of that high-quality service. And our admin staff are unbelievable in terms of going the extra mile. I think this is, clients love being here. They love being in this space. They feel very safe and secure, not judged, comfortable. Yeah. So,
wow, you have an amazing team and an amazing reputation. And Melbourne Child Development, I'm absolutely certain, has a very bright future. What do you think we'll be talking about this time next year?
Interesting, we haven't talked about NDIS, which is going to be going to change the environment. It's a wonderful opportunity, something that was in my goals when I started my practice. You know, what my goal was that, and we still, Tony and I have a foundation which is in its infancy, but, you know, we wanted to, at that time, provide speech pathology services for people who would not otherwise be able to access them. But, you know, they're helping children with autism programs, and now NDIS is making that possible. So that's just incredible. We've now got to work out the business model where that can be sustainable for us, where the NDIS, we can provide that service in a sustainable way without turning into a foundation or a not-for-profit.
Yeah. I'm sure this time next year we will be talking about the NDIS, because by then it will have rolled out in several more big metro areas in most of the capital cities. So I can imagine that will be there on the table. What else is in your future?
Well, I think hopefully we'll be talking about our multidisciplinary practice and the different ways that we are working, and hopefully we can develop a business model that supports a very much, you know, a team model of practice rather than, you know, individual health practitioners working with a family in an individual session. And hopefully we can have worked out different ways of working. I mean, I think we've always been very good at different ways of working. We just be where we need to be to support communication development of our clients.
Yeah. In my experience.
Hopefully, I can say, hopefully I'll be talking to you about how much more time I have not client facing and how much more time I have for business development and walking my puppy.
Do you mind if I ask how many hours a week you work?
It's improved enormously in terms of decrease the hours.
Oh, good, good, good. But you work unbelievably hard. How many hours? What's it sitting out at the moment?
I don't even count the hours. But, you know, every day, every night, and at least, you know, a long stretch of one part of the weekend. So, you know, like a 4 or 5 hour stretch on some part of the weekend. Yeah.
That could be around 60 hours, 50 to 60 hours.
Could be, yeah.
Could be.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've now got a day where I actually don't come into the practice and I work from my office at home. So that's just wonderful. And I'm taking all of July off, which I did last year. So that's amazing. That's amazing. I mean, I do the summer shift. I do the Christmas holiday shift in January. So, you know, to be able to take a month off is, you know, incredible. So that's exciting.
Absolutely. I hope there's a passport involved in that month off.
Yeah, yeah. There was last year. We've got a 16-year-old, so, you know, he just wants to go local. So
cool.
No boarding.
Have fun.
Yeah.
Have fun. That'll be divine. So the future's looking bright. We've all got the NDIS in front of us in our futures, and we've all got business opportunities that brings, and we've got workforce challenges and joys ahead of us as well. Is there anything else? Anything you could predict?
Yeah, I think we've all got to look at the future and look at how we are delivering our allied health services in the future. So it's not going to be necessarily clinic-based, one-on-one. I think we need to be looking at how we're going to deliver service digitally and regionally and remotely and internationally. And I think that's, you know, a really big challenge. But that's where we need to be looking. You know, there's going to be lots of people that will be able to, you know, copy what we do, you know, provide it on the net, you know, compete with what a speech pathologist is. There's probably going to be emerging professions which will be, you know, competing with what we do. Are we going to become much more transdisciplinary in our work? I mean, I think the future's got, you know, there's many sort of moments where we're going to have to say, well, you know, are we prepared for this? Are we heading, you know, are we getting ready for 2030?
Completely. And I've got to remember that this is an audio medium, but just out of reach is Carol Dweck's book, Growth Mindset. You might like this one.
Yeah.
I suspect, actually, I'll put the link in the show notes for anybody who's listening. So, Mindset, the New Psychology of Success. And my vibe is that we all need to be completely ready for growth and change. And we need to be completely ready for a future that delivers services in ways that we possibly can't even imagine yet. Because, you know, augmented reality and virtual reality hasn't quite hit the disability and allied health sector yet. It's there if you go looking for it. So, yeah. Could be really, really interesting. And I love change and I love that things don't stay the same. But from some of the stuff I've read and heard from my business mentors, I just sit here thinking, oh my gosh, how is, you know, the really typical, hardworking, awesome allied health business owner going to wrap their head around that one?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I think it was great because with the 2030 project for Speech Pathology Australia, we looked at all of that. You know, we looked at robotics and we looked at, we just looked at scenario thinking. And so, you know, that's accessible too. The speech pathology, if any of the speech pathologists are listening to this, the Speech Pathology 2030 document is available to look at as well. So, yeah, we've, you know, got to get on with it. We've got to keep thinking and keep taking risks and being adventurous and, yeah, exactly.
I think that is just the perfect, perfect place to end this lovely conversation. I have so enjoyed catching up with you. Such a reminder that we need to chat a little bit more often. But with our competing diaries, it typically takes weeks for us to find a point. So thank you so much, Robin, for sharing up all of that good stuff. So I'm going to give you the last say. You might like to quickly pitch your business and certainly say the website out loud. We'll have all of that in the show notes. But from my behalf, thank you so, so, so much. And I'll leave you with the last word.
Yeah, well, thanks, Kathy. It's been an absolute delight because I think it just gave me an opportunity to sit back and reflect. And, you know, I had the discussion with my co-director and, yeah, it did. Preparing for this really invigorated me, gave me a lot of energy to say, hey, we've really achieved a lot and we've got a lot we can offer. And, yeah, I think that, as I said, our website hybrid because it's a patch from what we did have. And so we've got a big investment in website, which we're working on at the moment, a whole new website, www.melbournechilddevelopment.com.au. And there you'll see all of our great programs that are available. And if anyone rings our very helpful staff, they are fantastic at really spending time with you and letting you know about the nuts and bolts of how we do things here and very welcoming. Thanks, Kathy.
Thanks, Robin. Catch you later. Bye.
Okay, bye.
A big thank you for investing your time right through the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. We hope you really enjoyed the conversation. There's lots more just like it waiting for your listening ears. If you're running a private practice and keen for some more business know-how and confidence, head on over to my website, nakerconsulting.com.au. There you'll find business resources and inspiration. There's blogs, forms, templates. There's information about our conferences, workshops, web events, and more. While you're there, you're warmly invited to book yourself in for a free 30-minute coaching session. Let's find some solutions to your current business challenges. And yes, you are more than welcome to pick my brains. My business has a weird name, but it has a cool story. You can read about that when you're on the website. But let me spell it for you now. nacre.com.au. Thank you for listening to Private Practice Secrets. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, wishing you and your business a brilliant day.